In this episode, I sat down with my friend Andy Barker. He was in town to attend a local business conference within the industry that he's in, and he made time for us to come over here, sit down with us, and share with us. And I'm so glad he did, and I'm appreciative, and I think that you'll enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening. We were talking before the cameras might have been on, but it's not gonna, you know, it's like B-roll that it's never gonna see the light of day.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he can talk longer than you can say no. I love that.
That's a client that I got that from that'll probably not be watching one of these videos. That's just my guess, not because he's a bad guy. He just probably isn't that interested in it. But he is a legend in the industry. But let me fast forward a little bit then, okay?
Control things, especially the narrative. But yeah. You started your second business, and I said earlier, because I can see, and I think anybody listening can see or hear how the activities that you have done since high school, and you know, MLM, and the mentors that you've had, and the work, and you know, there's, you can tell you've taken previous experiences and built upon that, you know, so,
yeah,
which is very interesting to me. So, yeah. And you're very successful. So business number two, is that a national business, or is that local?
Mm-hmm. It's on a national scale. Yeah. A lot of the companies that we represent, we represent nationally, maybe not all 50 states, but national, on a national level.
I mean, you're down here for a conference in that industry.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So
it's like what you do, or at least my perception of what you do, right? You have this very niche, little, small group.
We should swap roles for like a week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, it's like, I can learn some of what you do, and you can learn, you know, some of what I do.
You would do well. I would be in trouble. I would have to lean on your staff,
that.
You know?
I doubt that.
Yeah, I can tell you come and meet. Come and meet our teams. You'll find out I'm the lowest common denominator.
That's why I'm not worried. I know you'd have a good team.
Well,
I wouldn't be concerned at all. I'll just show up for photos or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I just pick up the receipts. That's what I tell people. I talk on the phone and collect receipts. We have a great staff, though. It's just our team is awesome. But on each company, I mean, it's really cool. But yeah, they're very different. You know, you've got private, Central Indiana, commercial and residential clients there. And then you have this national, but all public funded, you know, government based, a lot of politics involved, commissioners and sheriffs and different aspects. And so it was fun for me. I mean, you can tell I'm a serial entrepreneur. I love variety. You know, I'm sure that I get easily distracted but I love that variety. You know, I constantly, you know, I'm consistently inconsistent. So it feeds me. So we're cruising along. We're married. We've got one kid.
Second one came along.
BB. And Blakester, he came along. I nicknamed the kids Brookster and Blakester. And so they're young and at home, and Bridget was working in the office at that point. So we had built our first home and put the office in our basement, and Bridget was running the books, and she's way more organized and talented and smarter than I am. And she was killing it. But she said, hey, I think I want to stay home with the kids. And
you're like, yeah, okay, stay home in the basement while you're doing it.
And so I thought, well, shoot, we'll have to hire somebody and, you know, add to the payroll. And no, I was excited about that. That's my mom stayed home with us. It was a really blessing. And then Bridget came to me when Brooke was getting ready to go to kindergarten. It's a couple of years out. She says, hey, I've been thinking about this. I think I want to homeschool the kids. Mm-hmm. And I went, you want to homeschool the kids? And I thought, this is horrible, James, but I'll admit it. I thought, I don't want my kids to be weird. You know, now that's horrible. I mean, that is awful for me to say.
It's a fair thought.
But here we are in 2025, and homeschooling now is like the cool thing to do, right? I mean, at least in a lot of circles because of 2020. Well, anyway.
I think your children are doing pretty well, too.
So it's like everything. It just depends. There's some families it's a great fit for. Some should not be doing that. And some kids are going to thrive in a public or private setting, and some are not, right? So it was just a neat opportunity. Her heart was in that. She comes from a family of school teachers as well, administrators. She was principal. Her dad was principal. I married the principal's daughter. I take a lot of pride in being able to say that. But so she came from that. It was kind of in her past. And so she knocked it out of the park as far as a homeschool mom goes. just killed it, crushed it, and helped a lot of her friends, and a lot of her friends helped us. And so that had me, now I'm hiring more people in the offices, our basement's getting smaller. And so Fred had started the business, he owned an office building. So he offered his son and I to buy that office building. So I moved out of the basement into the office building there in the mid 2000s. And then what happened was our industry, the corrections industry, started to get impacted by mental health. I didn't see it at the time. Today, it's obviously prevalent. Everybody can kind of knows the buzzword is mental health. And but one of the companies that we represent, Norix Group out of West Chicago, just big time innovators, private family owned company. They are always well ahead of the curve. They saw it. And so we started another company that was a sister company to Real Time Detention called Real Time Furniture.
Number three.
And so we started Real Time Furniture to specialize in non-corrections environments. Because if I walked into a hospital and I said, hey, I'm Andy with Real Time Detention, they would say, what are you doing here? We don't have any inmates. We have patients. So anyway, so we've built that business up and it's growing at leaps and bounds and growing at an incredible pace at this point. And again, a whole separate staff that's much more talented than I am. And so a gentleman that I was working with at the time, Doug, he and I jointly started that business. Doug's retired and now there's a young rising star, Brandon, who's running that business and killing it and doing a great job. And so we had that business going and then we got to 2008, right? Now I remember 2008, that's when all the, backhoes and bulldozers stopped moving around and I got a good taste of what happens when an economy kind of flinches. And so found myself in trouble in that era. And so Fred's my mentor. I had moved on. Bob wasn't in my life anymore. My dad's always been my spiritual mentor. But I had, in 2005, gotten very, very confident in myself. I made a decision to start another business, an excavating company.
And, number four.
Yeah. And thought I just listen to all the I's in this. Okay. I already had a business. I already had project managers. I already had a bank account, blah, blah, blah. And boy, did I learn a lesson and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But we lost a lot of money. We lost a couple commas worth of money. And, I figured I would be a greeter somewhere at age 95 and was willing to do it. We didn't bankrupt anything. Most people probably would have, but there was no way we were going to do that and tarnish the Barker name in Indianapolis. And so the Lord allowed me to dig out of that, literally, and we finished those jobs and we sold all of our bright, beautiful yellow Caterpillar equipment in the fall, early fall of 2008, right before, about a month before the market crashed. If that's not a God thing, I don't know what is. And I remember the Caterpillar salesman calling me in December saying, I don't know who's watching over you, but there are excavating companies hitting the wall right now, left and right. And all of our equipment had already been sold when the hay was still being made. And so I learned a lesson there in 2008. And so what we did, B&B Group, we got in the conference room and we said, hey, all of this commercial construction just shut down. What do we want to be when we grow up, right? So we looked at it and said, all right, what are we best at? What are we passionate about? And then what's our economic driver? Like, what can we be profitable with? So if that sounds familiar, that's a Jim Collins good to great concept. And at that point, I had my mentor, Uncle Terry, enter my life. Uncle Terry has a automotive plant manufacturing background, and Uncle Terry was able to give me advice to this day. He still advises me on business things. And so unfortunately, Fred passed away in 07, very young, and miss him like crazy. Look forward to seeing him again. I know where he's at. He's in heaven, and I'll be looking forward to seeing him again. But we had 08 happen. We reorganized ourselves, decided we were going to get out of some of the lines of service. We stayed in irrigation and snow and ice. Ironically, the corrections market, because it's such a long sales cycle, it's about 5 years from napkin to opening. So those things get funded, and the way our world works, as we know, once the government prints it, it rarely gets canceled. They normally always have to print more because of what they've designed. And so we get those projects. We didn't feel the impact of 08 in the corrections business until about 11, 12, and 13.
Yeah.
It's always about 5 years in the rear. So we went through a little bit of a consolidation, which lasted about 5 years. And that business is kind of crazy because you go in 5 year increments. And so it goes pretty quick. But yeah, so there I was clicking along, business is going, digging out of the hole and learning a lot about money and not being highly leveraged and what quote unquote good debt was. And so Bridget and I got really committed to the Dave Ramsey program, okay? Getting debt free.
Yep.
Okay. And so we were able to do that. I mean, that was completely a God thing, but we were able to do that. I mean, we were down to Bridget stopped getting her nails done. And, you know, because we were going to capture that money back and put it back in our budget. And I had a deep hole to dig out of. And so we were able to get ourselves debt free and committed and stay committed to that. And I never missed a payroll. I'm very, very passionate about other people's money. Mm-hmm. We've never missed a payroll all these years. And, you know, I'm very passionate about staying solvent. Okay. You know, I understand from learning about the infinite banking concept that leverage is okay. And I've kind of checked this, kind of done a gut check on it too morally. But if my word is solvency. We want to stay solvent on what we're doing. And so that's been a practice that we've adopted. And so let me fast forward and get into how I got to the infinite banking concept.
Okay.
I think that's probably plenty. I just learned a tough lesson in the excavating business, mm-hmm. that there's a couple of things you need to do before you make big decisions. One, stop and pray and wait. If you don't get an obvious answer, if that door is open or door is closed, then you just wait for that to become obvious. Don't stop moving, but you wait for that answer. Number two, don't get confident in your net worth or your checkbook balance because it can vaporize very quickly. And number three, did I mention praying? So, and don't get into something that you don't know anything about. Okay. So anyways, so we tried to apply that moving forward and I feel like we've done that. And so I'm in this small group Bible study, okay? And we're talking about the book of Revelation in the end times, okay? And talking about Israel and the book of Daniel and Ezekiel and really great guy who was very studied in that, Larry, and he's even written his own notes on it and I still get information from him to this day. And during that discussion, I came across this book called The Middle East Meltdown. I don't know if anybody's ever read that book, but in that book, my first experience with a term called the petrodollar. I had no idea what the petrodollar was. If they mentioned that in school, that was one of those days I missed, but I'm pretty sure they didn't bring it up.
Yeah, they didn't bring it up.
And so that got me digging into what was that all about? And then, you know, you can go out on crazy trails over different wars and why things happened or whatever. But regardless, I got exposed to fiat currencies and centralized banking. I had heard the term fiat currency, but I never knew what that meant.
They didn't teach that in school either.
They didn't really spend much time talking about that. No. Looking back, you can see where that Pink Floyd song came from, just another brick in the wall. Man, there's some depth there. I'm not even sure those guys knew what lyrics they were writing, but if you apply that to the system, wow. But anyway, so I find out what fiat currencies are. I find out what centralized banking was. So I get really into it. And my poor family, I mean, my wife and kids, they had to listen to Dad go through this. And so it was just something I found natural interest in. And you can probably tell from my body language, I still get excited about it today. It's just something I'm passionate about. And so, because I didn't really know what was going on and how it worked. And I know some great people that are bankers. And I don't think they know what's going on. And to this day, I appreciate them. We have close relationships with all of our vendors. They're great people. But once I figured out that, I was on a journey to go, okay, then what's the answer? Like, if all of this is a problem, what's the answer? And then I'm on a business trip, vacation trip, both in... We're out of the country and we're driving around in this car and my kids are listening to me talk about what I've learned about centralized banking and centralized banks and fiat currencies and all these things.
Driving around in the car so you have a captive audience.
And I'm way across the world. I'll just put it that way. And, you know, I'm a good business guy and I'm stewarding money and checking it all the time and making sure there's no fraud and all these things. And that was a year in 2019 where the interest rates on money markets were doing pretty well. I don't remember what it was. Let's say it's 2 or 3% or whatever, right? And running businesses and having payroll, you've got to keep capital on hand. And if you sign on to the concept of being solvent and not leveraged, you know, especially after my excavating stint, I really was anti-debt. And so we would keep a lot of cash on hand to carry us, you know, and make payroll and do those things. So at various times through the year, we would have a decent amount of cash. It's all relative, but sitting in the bank. And that year, the money market was paying pretty good money. And so we were out of the country and I checked the bank and they had made a deposit on interest payment. And I thought, hey, that's a pretty decent amount of money. And not that I had never paid attention to interest, but I thought, that's pretty crazy. Now, when I was 18 years old, one of my clients, who still plays a major role in my life now, they let me do landscaping at their house, their new house, big house at the time. Should have never let a kid do it. We did it right, but I mean, there's no way I should have had that job. He encouraged me to start an IRA. Mm-hmm. His dad was in the business. They were in the insurance business and investment business there in Indianapolis. Great, great people. And I'm so thankful he helped me develop the habit of saving, okay? Now, if I had it to do all over again, and he would have agreed with me, ironically, I would have started an insurance policy, right? A properly structured, dividend-paying, whole life cash value policy with a mutually owned company, all right? I've got that ingrained in my head. I would have done that, and I would encourage anyone, regardless of your age, but especially the younger you are, go seek that out. That is not common knowledge, but it is very normal to do. And if you go back a few generations, our grandparents and great-grandparents used those vehicles to store their assets. Well, he got me started on that. And I was so thankful, you know, but I was really anti-stock market. And what I have found out since then is a lot of business owners are, because it's not tangible. And we know that typically we can do better returns than what the stock market's doing, and we've got control over it, right? So you hear some of these things that fit right into the infinite banking concept. So there I was learning about fiat currencies, centralized banking, and then seeing the fact that, man, I mean, enough money in an account when the money market's actually paying a real, well, not a real, but decent percentage, depends on how much you have in there, that's numbers that start to matter. And then I thought to myself, man, this is not going to be good because I've got to basically drain that account at different times of the year. And now I got to wait till I fill that back up to start getting that interest again, right? Here it comes. So I'm mowing one day on the farm and listening to some, I don't know what I was listening to be honest with you, but I was seeking out where's the best place to put that capital. And I come across whole life insurance. And then, just like everybody, I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I got caught up in who's paying the highest dividends, right? So I went that route and sought that out. And lo and behold, my very first client who had told me to get into the IRA also was a major agent for a well-known company.
Wow.
That sells life insurance and the type that I wanted to buy. Now, their agency's not active in IBC, but I didn't really know IBC yet. Okay. I just knew about these policies and uninterrupted compound interest. And so it hit me where this really resonated with me was line of credit. That's the first thing that resonated with me. It wasn't death benefit. It wasn't some of these other awesome aspects. It was line of credit. How do I get this interest to be uninterrupted? I'm doing all the talking. I need to let you ask a question.
It's like, I learned a long time ago that when people know what they're talking about, just let them talk. Mm. Mm. So please continue, because I'm enthralled. I mean, I know a lot of this. You know, we've spoken regularly over the last few years, but I don't know all the details and all the nuances. So I'm like, it's riveting to me, you know.
So I started searching that out in probably 2018, 2019, figured out, okay, this looks like the one that's paying the most dividends, which is the wrong way to analyze it. But that's how I was analyzing it. And my lack of knowledge, I knew that it was a good vehicle. I just didn't know how good it could be.
And it was with a good company that paid a good dividend.
Strong company.
So it checked, you know, the
absolutely,
boxes.
Absolutely, yeah. my agent tried to sell me or put me in, I should say. He didn't sell me at all. I called him and said, hey, I want to buy one of these. Before I did that, I went and checked with my wife, because I've learned, especially since my excavating fiasco, God gave women intuition.
No
question. It's a real thing. And I'm married to a good one, and she's a Proverbs 31 wife, yep. And she is such a blessing to me. And so I went to her first and said, hey, let's pray about this. Let's think about this. It's definitely not mainstream. You know, it's
definitely not Dave Ramsey.
It's not Dave Ramsey. No. And although I appreciate that, right?
Yes,
that's kind of like, you know,
disparage
if you Ramsey haven't gotten yourself to solvency yet, do that first.
Yep.
Right. So anyway, so we went and decided, you know, jointly together, we're in agreement on any of that stuff that we do, that we were going to do this. So I sought them out. He tried to put me in the right policy. He actually had it structured the right way, even though he doesn't do infinite banking. And I talked to him about it. I think I had started to get onto the YouTube channel, not yours, but just starting to listen to some of the noise out there. And so I was starting to say that phrase, although I didn't know what I was talking about. And what I did is I panicked. So I got into the policies, bought a couple of them, and then I bought one for me and my wife, and then both kids, bought them on the kids right away. So we got four policies. And then I said, oh, no, I need to change these. I need to get into the high early cash value.
From the noise or what you were listening to.
Yeah. So I called and said, hey, I think I want to get out of these and convert them. And they tried to actually talk me out of it. And three of those I changed. At some point they went, hey, it's your money. You do what you want to do. Go ahead and we'll just 1035 them and you can do that and we'll put you in those vehicles. And they're not bad vehicles. They're just, if I had it to do over again, I would have stuck with the original that had, you know, a much better long term. I was thinking short term. I was thinking I'm going to need to get into these and use this sooner. And
need all the cash right now. And yeah.
I didn't understand what I was doing. So they were trying to give me good advice. I just didn't take it. So we were headed down the right direction. Now, my daughter's policy, we didn't change hers because she hates needles. And she'll be watching this. So, Brooke, daddy loves you, but she hates needles. And so I told her, she says, Dad, please don't make me do that. And I said, okay, we won't change yours. So she actually has the best policy out of all of those long term. So she'll be thankful for that someday. But we changed those over. And then I was just burying myself in education because I was so into the topic and I was eating books on life insurance and there's all kinds of books. I've kind of built the library up. And then as God has it, I stumble across your YouTube. And as soon as, my very first episode, I saw you and Ryan. Okay. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of collective intelligence in one room. And as always, James, I always gravitated towards the people who were senior of me in my life. And so I just felt like I hit it off with you. We didn't even know each other, but just watching the YouTube.
I'm the same way. I've always gravitated to older.
Oh, I thought you meant you always hit it off with you.
Oh, no. I mean, no. It's like,
I'm the same way. I like me.
I mean, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I married my beautiful wife and I married way, way up. So no, I gravitate and have always to senior, more experienced, just older. I don't know what it is, but I'm
So I was drawn that way. And obviously you can look back now and I think it was just the Lord's hand on it. But, you know, I thought, I'm going to reach out to his office. And now at this point, remember, I was feeling pretty sure about what I knew. I mean, I still didn't know that much, but I was feeling pretty sure. I knew that I had done the wrong thing in my mind, basically by changing those policies. But like I said, I knew I was with a good company. I knew I was with good agents. Those are good people. Still work with them today. Think the world of them. But I wanted now someone who really was doing infinite banking and could mentor me and help me understand how do I actually use this and do it the right way. And so I come across you guys and found out, okay, this is the original. These are the people who are the core. Of doing it right. They're not just noise and kind of loosely using IBC and then giving wrong advice, bad advice, okay? So I could kind of see through some of the lines, but I didn't know what I didn't know. So I remember calling your office and telling your sister, hey, I look back on it and I'm embarrassed, but I, you know, this is Andy, and I know I want to talk to James, and I'm ready to go. And she was so nice to me and said, well, we kind of have a process. And I said, no, I don't think I need to do that. I just need to talk to James. I'm ready to go. And she was very nice. And I remember you called me back, and I don't know that you were irritated, but no. You did call me back. But you're probably thinking, okay, you know, we have a process for a reason. Who is this? What do you want to do? And well,
I don't want to interrupt
you. No, go ahead. No, please.
I remember, you know, our first conversation and how accurate it is. I recall that you weren't really comfortable filling out all the questions online, even though it's all secure. Just the depth of questions we were asking. that's what I recall. It's like, this gentleman, you know, he wants to talk to you, but he's not comfortable with filling all that information out, which is fine. I mean, I'll give anyone that's a legitimate, you know, has legitimate questions, concerns, or interests or not. I mean, I'll give anyone a 20-minute phone call. So, that's my memory. I also recall that our 20-minute conversation went upwards of an hour or a little over. But keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. No. And I kept reading the books they weren't books that you guys had recommended. It was just on the topic. And, you know, I remember the example of the car loan, and that's the one that resonated with me and still does. I think it's a great entry level of just the difference in how
the car loan on Nelson's book.
It was in somebody else's book at the time, but it was basically, you know, hey, if you start out and you have to borrow to get the car, you don't have the money, and, you know, you're paying that loan off. And by the time you get to zero, you got to borrow again. You're always below zero. And if you save, right, up, and then you draw it back to zero, right? You lose. So you finance everything you buy, right?
Period.
You're either paying interest or losing the ability to earn it. So that, to me, still today is one of the best, easiest examples, because everybody buys a car for the most part. So anyway, you were very patient with me, worked with me. I would have bought something very first conversation. You took the time to ask the right questions, to advise me, to work with me. And it took us close to a year before I was buying my first policy with you. And at the time I thought, man, you know, I might pass away here. We might not get this done.
That's true. You know? We've had people graduate during underwriting and during the conversation process, but it takes what it takes, and everybody's different. And no one's situation is the same.
That's right.
You know, so.
And so you were very patient with me and kind, and then you put me into this policy, and we figured out, hey, what's the right fit? And you guys are, you know, when somebody says, hey, we take the time to really understand our client and make sure it's the right fit and all those things, so many people say that, and there's no depth there. They don't mean it. Just sounds like a good commercial. Being one of your clients and experiencing that, I can attest to it. That's really what you did. You guys, and I didn't even understand how much you understood during that process until even a year or two later.
Really?
When we were looking at doing our next policies together, that I went, that's amazing how he could see from the data I sent him, this was the right fit at the right time. And so I would say that you were patient and you were accurate and conservative and didn't let me get as crazy as I wanted to get, but at the same time stretched me the appropriate amount so that I didn't regret it later. Because the common theme on any of these is, I wish I had started sooner, and I wish I would have been paying more premium. And it sounds crazy until you learn what this industry and this concept is about. But that's going to be, if you grasp it and you take hold of this, you'll be saying the same thing. You know, you'll be saying
the same thing. I appreciate you sharing that. And you know what? You've purchased more policies, additional policies. But I do want to point out that, you know, the previous policies that you felt like you did something wrong or corrected them, you still own those.
Still own them.
And I mean, we had we've had many conversations, but we distinctly covered why you would keep those. I mean, we went, why you would not 1035 exchange. You know, you called, you're ready to do something right now, which I respect. I think I'm okay at what I do, and I can figure out a solution if I have the information in front of me, fairly quickly. But you still own. I just want to make a point that not even if you've made a mistake, you feel like you've made a mistake, maybe you did, maybe you didn't. Maybe you did make a mistake and policies may need to be replaced or that consideration should occur, but maybe not, you know? And so mm-hmm. I know, and I'm just saying that because the industry is ripe. If you, you know, a prospective client called, you're ready to go, you know, I just want to talk to James to get it done, what I want to do, which is legitimate. But you would have, replaced those policies for the second and third time.
Oh yeah. If you would have advised me to do that, I probably would have done that. Now, obviously, being a business guy, I recognize the cost up front.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you can look at that and say, gosh, look at what I lost. It's not it's not lost. It's future gain. Yeah. And so, you know, when you're capitalizing something, you know, you're going to have to go backwards. I mean, that's the concept that in reality, if you looked at your balance sheet, sure, you're going to go down a little bit, but that's business. You're going to go down before you go up.
I like, you know, you mentioned a 5-year business cycle on that one particular business. You know, it takes several years for different types of businesses to even be profitable. Just because you have a cash flow, you've put a bunch of money in capital, people, experience, labor, and you generate a cash flow next month, next week, next year, it doesn't mean you're profitable. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just a return of capital. It doesn't mean it's profitable.
Oh, yeah.
And so my point is, you know, different businesses have different lengths and durations and time periods before they're actually profitable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, and you relate that to capitalizing policies, i.e. paying a premium in the early years, trying to avoid any kind of loss of liquidity. That's legitimate. I understand that. But in most policies, you know, there's not a growth above the input, the premium, until it could be 5 years, it could be 7 years, it could be 9 years. There's a lot of different things that moves that number, and it's not all about youth or rating, super preferred or standard or whatever. It's about proper structure, in my opinion, that is personal and technical and really tailored to an individual, their businesses, their cash flows. But I guess, you know, I'm convinced that everybody should consider the infinite banking concept, at least learn about it and decide for yourself, you know, whether it makes sense or it doesn't. But I believe also that a business person that understands cash flows and understands leverage and then has some of the experiences that you've had, you know, you work hard, you're a builder, you build things and you make them profitable, and you've learn the lesson of solvency, which I use that word in my conversation directly because of you. It makes total sense, right? Those things are going to dictate what you do, and what you do is going to dictate how, you know, X number of dollars is available through a loan or withdrawal or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those are more important, in my opinion, considering that in totality, age, duration, cash flows, goals, that supersedes the how much can I borrow against tomorrow, you know? Anyway, and I don't mean to go up on a rabbit trail. But.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I can remember buying the first policy from the other agent, other company, and, you know, that friend of mine says that, you know what you're doing here. You're going to see your balance sheet go down for temporarily before it comes back up. And I said, oh, sure, I get that. You're capitalizing another asset, you know, and that's important. Yep. And it's not an investment.
Right.
It's an asset. You use this asset for your other investments, right? And so I got that concept pretty easily. So I wasn't caught up. I understand, though, most people get caught up on, oh, hey, what's that return?
Yep.
You know, and that wasn't, because I'm kind of anti-stock market, to me, it's all funny money anyway. I understand the insurance companies go out and some of their capital is in stocks and bonds and things of that sort. So I'm not naive to that. But as far as just sound money, who teaches that? And so there's your solvency word, right? So I've certainly become passionate.
It's your word. I'm hoping that
I can become part of that 10% with you guys. You know, one of my favorite guys to listen to is Carlos. Yeah, Carlos. You know that guy.
Yeah,
Carlos Lara. Because he talks about the 10% and he goes through in his videos and talks about all that he's learned about helping companies write themselves when they're in trouble. And he breaks it down. I mean, there are some awesome videos. I'm having my son watch these.
Yep.
He's coming up through the ranks now and he's getting interested in, all right, Dad, you know, listen to you chatter all these years. I love the questions he's asking because he's interested in it. Mm-hmm. And he's getting older now and getting into the world and realizing, oh, this is what Dad was talking about. And Dad's just talking about what other people were kind enough to teach him about. But, you know, when you zoom out and you see what's really going on, it's pretty crazy, but it reinforces what guys like yourself are trying to teach. And that's why I say your mission is a whole lot deeper than just writing a policy.
Yeah, it's much deeper. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, you had policies, you got off into listening and consuming, eating books is a term you use. I love that. You thought you did something wrong, you wanted correction, you reached out to us, we had a conversation, you're ready to go. It was some time period before you put additional policies in force. And so that time period that, you know, you put a policy in force with me was about 2022. Okay.
Yep.
And then we mentioned that you purchased additional policies. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of, you know, share with us what you will, what you have done since then? And then I'm also interested, you know, so if I recap, I don't want to leave anything out, and I know you can't cover everything, but you know, you originally started searching for the high dividend. You know, you thought this is what you wanted. You went and got it. And then you continued listening, thought you made a mistake. So, you know, our understanding changes, our mm-hmm. knowledge changes, or it should, you know, mm-hmm. we should continue to do better. You know, you mentioned that earlier. My dad, I grew up, I heard it was drilled into me, if you know better, you should do better, right? Mm-hmm. So this is just my opinion. I think that people need to hear your thoughts. Mm. I mean, it's talk about pure gold. I mean, because, you know, like when you were going off down the rabbit trail or the search, you know, you're just consuming, eating books, and you're listening to these things. And when you hear something that resonates with you and you can tell that it's like honest and trying to be transparent, it's like, that would have helped you, you know, and I believe that exists today. My whole goal is for people to listen, and if it resonates with them, it will benefit them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, and on that point, James, I think what resonated with me was the people I had found online. They're probably the ones that are paying the most. I'm not a social media guy to this day. I'm really not. I usually consume your show on YouTube, and I watch the Nelson Nash Institute channel. And pretty much outside of that, I'm listening to Frank Turek or Jack Hibbs or some of the guys that, you know, talk about, you know, things that I care about, which is a biblical worldview. But you can tell when you're listening to somebody, you know, out of the heart speaks the mouth. And so the things I didn't hear, I wasn't hearing profanity. I wasn't seeing pride. I wasn't hearing, you know, flash in the pan and
the mics weren't on.
We're going to make $1 zillion in 6 weeks because you're going to borrow from this. I mean, just all the silliness that apparently several people are falling into. But once I understood somebody was long-term, they seemed to have a pretty good moral compass. And then of course, following your advice, I bought the book, right? Everybody talks about the book. But once I started reading and listening to Nelson Nash and realized his biblical worldview, and now I consider my source, right? Remember earlier I said, take advice from people who are where you want to be. And so I knew we were onto something good here and something that we could trust. Just because it wasn't common didn't mean it wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things in life right now that are very common, but that does not make them normal.
Right.
My kids right now are going, oh my goodness, I can't believe my dad's saying that again. But
heard that my whole life.
I heard that my whole life. Yeah. But from 2022, so I get my first policy, different company, right? You know, and I did my research on that company because I hadn't heard of that company. And I went, well, who's that? And what do they do? And learned some things there. And then I came to one of your events after I bought my first policy, but before I bought additional. And there was a gentleman from that company that spoke, and I was thoroughly impressed and blown away by how solid they were and how solid of an individual he was. And just the feel-good indicator went up, but also the objective data that I was able to find was very solid. And so I feel very good about owning, you know, mutually owning part of that company and having some of our assets there. And so I immediately wanted to do a couple things. Like I said, I was very passionate about payroll. I still am. I'm very passionate about what happens after I'm gone. And my wife doesn't like me talking about it, but everybody knows, right? You're going to pay taxes, die, and then pay more taxes, right? And as a Christian who's put his faith in Christ, I know where I'm going when I die. And I'm comfortable talking about it. And I want to make sure I leave my house in order. I don't want to leave a big mess. Even though I enjoy making messes, and I really do, I thrive there. I have to surround myself with people who can clean them up. And I'm surrounded by great talent. Yeah. I don't deserve it, but these people in my life are just like incredible ditto. People. Yeah. And so the life insurance aspect of this, I talked about line of credit. You started educating me on the importance of the death benefit. Now, duh. You know, death benefit. But when everybody told you, including me when I was 18 years old, buy term and invest the rest, you know, that was the advice. You know, you knew you needed something, intuitively said, yeah, I'm married now, kids, and I probably need some life insurance. But no one took the time to figure out, hey, how much should you buy? What kind of a policy should that be? Is it convertible? You know, the only convertible would just be a car, right, where the top comes down. I mean, what's that all about? And how long does it last? And who are you buying it with? And there's so much there that is priceless information. You know, don't ask how much something costs. Ask what it's worth. And so the value of the information that people can gain from talking to you, listening to your podcast, Ryan, studying the Nelson Nash book and the Institute and the recommended books, I mean, that is priceless information to get. So I started understanding death benefit, understanding about being able to cascade this and build legacy out of it. And so we've bought policies on our grandkids. We have two grandkids. Our daughter's married. We have an awesome son-in-law, Dakota, and two grandkids, Bennett, who's two, and his nickname's Maverick. And our granddaughter, Sadie, is about 8 months now. And her nickname's Pixie. Mm. My daughter is a huge Disney fan. And so that comes from Pixie Dust. And little did I know, Tinkerbell's attitude is kind of hands on the hips. And Sadie's wearing it well so far. So right. She'll watch this 30 years from now and laugh at Grandpa. But we've got policies now on the grandkids. And of course, so we've got policies on ourselves, on our kids, and on our grandkids. And I'm working now with trusted advisors to build that out for legacy. And so that we can keep this going. And what that means is it's the right place to bank. It's the right place to put the assets. And so that we can carry on the mission, right? And I believe, and my son says this really well, but Frank Turk's the first guy I heard say it. Said, what's the goal? What's the mission? To know the Lord and make the Lord known, right? Mm. And that's not here to preach. That's here for you to discover. If you haven't thought about eternity, right? I mean, why would we buy death benefit? Because you're going to die, right? So everybody's going to end up graduating. You're not going to prevent that, no matter who says what. And when you do, there's going to be a conversation. I personally believe that conversation will be with Jesus, and we want that conversation to go well. So whether you believe something or not doesn't mean that it's not true. And so that is my heart in doing a lot of this, is not to create trust fund kids. Matter of fact, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I want them to carry on not only a great life here on earth, and being able to enjoy it and do fun things with it, but the passion of continuing to get that message out of the gospel and doing it with that. So that's part of my mission. I believe this is a great tool to do that. If I was to check out earlier than the average lifespan, I would want to know that our businesses are taken care of, that those people are not just taken care of. I mean, they can go on. They right. can keep those businesses going. They can do that.
Which takes a lot of thought, time, effort, consideration. I mean, that's not an easy task to put all that together, especially when you're on the fourth or fifth business or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And all, I mean, that's a labor of love almost.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, there's many labors of love, in my opinion, for that we all, you know, do and are active in. And I just want to point out that whenever you don't want to leave a mess, and you're including your team members and your vendors, employees, mm-hmm. and then generationally, I mean, that's, you know, we could talk about this in a 20-minute conversation, but that's laborious is what that mm-hmm. is, you know, and you're not doing it because you don't like them.
Mm. Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, it's easy to miss somebody's backstory.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I would say I don't want to create trust fund kids or grandkids is because I wouldn't want them to not have their own backstory. You know, I want mm-hmm. them to learn
yeah.
to whatever it is, whatever they're passionate about, whatever they're called to do. I want them to be able to earn that and have that satisfaction of earning it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Bob let me use one of his bays out of his 5-car garage, right? And my dad helped me build a pole barn, and Fred helped me get an office and start a business. You can help people along the way. It's what you guys are doing. And so we're going to help, and we're going to hope that our ceiling is their floor, but yep. we want them to earn it. We want yep. the satisfaction yep. of that. You know, work is the blessing. Work being hard is the curse, you know? Mm-hmm. So you want to work.
I truly believe that. And so I'm looking over here at the clock, and if we go to the particular restaurant that, you know, I'm recommending,
yeah,
we've kind of got to wrap up here.
Let's do it.
So do you have any closing remarks, comments that, and it's okay if you don't, you know, so.
Well, I've done a lot of talking today, so thanks for bearing with me on that.
Well, thanks for making time and sharing your time to come here and do that. I mean, I had not met Bridget, and
yeah.
that's a joy, and I appreciate that, yeah. and I appreciate you just sharing your time.
I think not infinite banking, but I think on top of that, what Nelson and you are continuing, and others that are doing it the right way, is so important. It's so far beyond material asset. It's one bucket. It's not put everything there. We've got a lot of different things that we do, and you can't really put it all there anyway. If you really do your research, that's not going to work. So the people that are out there promoting that, that's kind of some noise, in my opinion. Put as much of it as you can there, but eventually you'll be out, because they're only going to sell you so much insurance. But the work you're doing is foundational to life, and really beyond that is foundational to eternity. And so you're doing a great work, and this is the right fit no matter where you're at in life. It is. It's just the right fit. And you will always, once you take the time to study it and then you start to grasp it, you will without a doubt say, I wish I would have known it sooner. And I wish I would have started it sooner. And it's a gift to anybody. And if you're in your teens and 20s and whatever it is, don't mess around with it. Get started. Not everybody can buy insurance. Not everybody is insurable. And so get it while you can, while you're insurable. Even if you buy term that is convertible, to later convert it to a whole life that will last, do it. Don't wait.
I agree. I concur, sir, and I greatly appreciate that. You got to come back, okay? And you should consider coming back, please.
We'll okay? come back. We'd be happy to do it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on. It is a privilege to sit here. I'm not Ryan, but I kind of now know what it feels like to sit here. Of course, he's a little closer to the ceiling than I am. But I am, trust me, it is my gain to hang out and be associated with you guys and the education that you're putting out there for people, whether they're clients or not, are seeds that you're sowing that a lot of people are benefiting from. And so I'll just say it on behalf of anyone that's benefited from it. Thank you guys for making the investment. You could be busy closing more deals right now or doing something else that you want to do. And I'm just thankful that your passion's in this and that you're sharing it and trying to get the news out there.
Thank you. I really appreciate you. And, I thoroughly enjoy, I believe, iron sharpens iron. And, that part of the benefits that I get to enjoy are literally, and I'm not patronizing, having friendships and with clients that, what would it be worth to sit down or not even sit down with, but have a conversation almost when you want or when you ask, the generosity of giving time with someone who's successful in every area of their life. I've learned from you, so I thank you.
Likewise. Likewise.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I have. All right. Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.